All right, good morning. Just before we begin, just as always, this year is in memory of Baruch Levi ben Gershon Shlomo. Baruch Levi Gershon ben Shlomo, excuse me. And thank you to Mr. Margulies for sponsoring the cake and everything. Also in honor of Eliyahu Baruch ben Yoshua Yaakov Shenzen. Okay. All right, let's begin. So last time we basically introduced the Sefer. We spoke about the Rambam's intention in writing the Sefer, who his intended audience is, and I remember, which was 2 weeks ago already, that it kind of left a lot of us feeling a little bit inadequate in approaching the Sefer. The Rambam has very high standards. So today we're going to look at really why the Rambam has such high standards, right? Why he feels he has to put so many qualifications in the beginning of the book, in the beginning of his introduction. Why is he writing to such an elevated audience in the sense? And this is also going to serve as our transition into our real intended topic, which is going to be Tamei Mitzvot. Tamei Mitzvot, the reason why I think this is so essential, Tamei Mitzvot, as we'll see, kind of borders on, straddles two areas for the Rambam. Straddles the area between, I guess what I'll call, accessible Torah knowledge for the everyman, and maybe a little bit more, I'll call it metaphysics, calling it understanding the divine mind, whatever you will, it kind of straddles those two areas. So it's really important to understand where that boundary lies, and what our limits are going to be in discussing Tamei Mitzvot. So I just want to read to you, just to get us started, a paragraph, if you have your books, on page 40. It's chapter 31, in the first section of Mor Nebuchim. And the Rambam, in the beginning of chapter 31, he says as follows. On the bottom of page 40, he says, "Know that for the human mind there are certain objects of perception which are within the scope of its nature and capacity. On the other hand, there are amongst things which actually exist certain objects which the mind can in no way and by no means grasp. The gates of perception are closed against it. Further, there are things of which the mind understands one part but remains ignorant of the other. And when man is able to comprehend certain things, it does not follow that he must be able to comprehend everything. And this also applies to the senses, meaning the physical senses. They are able to perceive things, but not at every distance, and all other powers of the body are limited in a similar way. A man can carry two key cards. One person is capable of lifting, let's say, bench pressing 150 pounds, another person is capable of bench pressing 250 pounds, whatever it may be. So the physical senses vary, so too do the abilities of the intellect." And the Rambam, in the next paragraph, I just have a line underlined, it's about five sentences in, about on page 41, he declares, "A boundary is undoubtedly set to the human mind, which it cannot pass." So for the Rambam, does he understand this boundary to be inherent, absolute, or is it only relative, depending on people's level of perfection? Okay, that's going to be our point of departure for today. Yeah, so my question that I want to address is, the Rambam stated that, again, a boundary is undoubtedly set to the human mind, which it cannot pass, in terms of what people are capable of comprehending. So for the Rambam, is that boundary absolute? Meaning, does it exist across the human species, let's say? Or is it merely relative? Right? Are there certain...
He's already answered that in the introduction.
The lightning
flash.
Okay, metaphor. Excellent. Very good. So the Rambam, in his introduction, if you saw the introduction, the Rambam uses the lightning flash metaphor. If you could just explain maybe briefly what that metaphor is.
Although there are limits to most men, much of mankind, there are individuals who have varying degrees of moments of clarity, which is expressed in the metaphor of a lightning bolt. A person walking in the darkness of night doesn't see anything, but there are occasional flashes of light and you see what's going on.
Right.
There's different lengths of the lightning flash, different frequency, up to the point where Moses has more, like, continuous lightning flashes.
Right. He's like working in continuous light, right? Good. That's an excellent metaphor the Rambam uses. The Rambam is actually using this metaphor to describe prophecy. Right, so already we're starting on a very high level, but he seems to also apply it to the general intellectual capacities of man. If you look on the bottom of the second paragraph on page 3, where the Rambam talks about that metaphor, he says, "There are some to whom the flashes of lightning appear with varying intervals. Others are in the condition of men whose darkness is illuminated not by lightning, but by some kind of crystal or similar stone." I'm thinking kind of like a Harry Potter type of image, right? "Or other substances that possess the property of shining during the night. And to them, even this small amount of light is not continuous, but now it shines and now it vanishes, as if it were the flame of the rotating sword." Right? And then he says, "The degrees and the perfection of men vary according to these distinctions." But what I want to know is that at some level, is there an absolute limit. Right? Even, let's say, even for Moshe, right, which Rambam says, where it's continuous light, does that mean it's a completely clear sense of vision? Okay? That's what we're going to hopefully get to at the end of this year. We're going to talk about Moshe as well. The Rambam sees Moshe as the paradigm. Okay, good. So we'll get to that. We'll get to that at the end. We're going to take a look at those
psukim. Maybe he had the capacity for it, but Hashem denied it to him.
Yeah. Okay, good. So let's see. We'll see what the Rambam says. The Rambam on our last page of the source sheet actually is all about Moshe. So we'll see how the Rambam deals with that. But our point of departure really has to be how the Rambam understands human intellect in general. And if you look in source number one, the story starts in Sefer Bereishis. In source number one, it says in Pasuk Chaf Zayin, "Vayivra Elohim et Adam b'tzalmo b'tzelem Elohim bara oto zachar unekeva bara otam." Okay, very well-known pasuk. The question is, what is this concept of tzelem Elohim? It's often quoted. We talk about all human beings, and indeed, it's true. All human beings are endowed with tzelem Elohim. How does the Rambam understand tzelem Elohim? So if you look in the bottom of the box, in source number two, the beginning of Mor Nevuchim opens with the Rambam. The Rambam's on a mission at the beginning of Mor Nevuchim. He's on a mission to explain anthropomorphisms in the Torah, to explain metaphors in the Torah, and to really prove that all of the terms used in the Torah describing God, which seem to be physical, are nothing more than metaphor. He's on a mission to prove the incorporeality of God, meaning the fact that God has no body and no physical form. So what does this mean, Tzelem Elohim, in the image of God? Right, what does it mean to be created in the image of God? And in source number two, I have the excerpt here, but it's in the book. You can see it's in the very beginning of, after the introduction. It's going to be on page 13. Yes, page 13. He says, the term Tzelem, on the other hand, signifies, on the other hand, you see the footnote there, number two, previously in the chapter, he was talking about the term Toar. The Rambam thinks Toar in the Torah refers to a physical form. Right, someone is Yifat Toar. Right? That means a beautiful physical form. That's the word Toar, as opposed to the word Tzelem. He says it's a contrast. The term Tzelem, on the other hand, signifies the specific form, that which constitutes the essence of a thing, whereby the thing is what it is, meaning the reality of a thing insofar as it is that particular being. Okay, that's a lot of philosophical jargon. What does he mean? In the underlined section, in man, the form, the Tzelem, is that constituent which gives him human perception. And on account of this intellectual perception, the term Tzelem is employed in the sentences, in the Tzelem of God he created him. It is therefore rightfully said, you despise their Tzelem, the contempt can only concern the soul, the specific form of man. And he says very interestingly, the last sentence there, I am also of opinion that the reason why this term is used for idols, right, often Avodah Zarah, idols are described as the Tzelem, may be found in the circumstances that they are worshipped on account of some idea represented by them, not on account of their figure or shape. Very interestingly.
Isn't that the rationale that some Jews have using with Christianity, that, well, no, they're not really idol worshippers, they're not doing that, what they represent rather than their...
Right. For the Rambam, you see that Rambam can understand, based on this, the Rambam understands idol worship doesn't have to be physical idol worship, right? You can be worshiping some sort of idea that can be described as a tzelem. The term tzelem, says the Rambam, is a purely intellectual term. Okay?
So in effect, he's actually broadening the definition
exactly.
of idol worship. We're not saying it's just if you're worshiping this Buddha, whatever it is.
Right. Exactly. Certainly he would agree if you are worshipping a physical object, that's also Avodah Zarah. But like you said, he seems to be broadening the definition of idol worship. A person could be worshipping some sort of idea that's foreign to Judaism, and that could potentially, according to the Rambam, fall into the category of Avodah Zarah as well, very interestingly, at least on some level. But that's how the Rambam understands the term Tzelem Elohim, not the physical image of God at all, but intellectual capacity. And it's said clearly in the bottom of the box here, in the Rambam's Mishneh Torah as well. In the beginning of the Mishneh Torah, in Hilchot Yisorei HaTorah, Perek Dalet, in Halacha Chet, it says, I'm sorry, I don't have the translation here. It says, Nefesh kol basar hi tzurato shenatan lo hakel, vehadat hayetera hametsuya benafsho shel adam, hi tzurat ha'adam hashalem b'da'ato. What does he say? The da'at ha'yitera, the additional higher level of knowledge over animals, that is what's considered the tsura, the form of a human being. The al tsura zu ne'emar b'torah na'aseh adam b'tzalmenu kidmutenu. Klamar she'tihye lo tsura hayodat umaseget hade'ot she'en lahem golem. The Rambam is a little more specific in his definition here. It's not only intellectual capacity, but what does he mean when he says maseget hade'ot she'en lahem golem? What does that mean specifically? A person is maseget hadayot she'en lahem golem.
He has no form. It's a concept. concept with no form.
Exactly. The capacity for abstract thought. Right, to be able to comprehend abstract ideas, things which don't have physical form. Right, it's one level of understanding, says the Rambam, to be able to appreciate, let's say, physical space, so, you know, three-dimensional space, whatever it is, or physical objects, have an artistic sense maybe, but it's another concept entirely to be able to the capacity for abstract thought. That capacity for abstract thought, says the Rambam, is what's defined as Tzelem Elohim. It says, "Kemo ha-melachim shehin tzura belo golem ad shitamelehen." Like the concept of angels, and the Rambam's conception of angels is way beyond what we're talking about today. But angels themselves, the Rambam says, being intellectual concepts that man can comprehend through his tzelem Elohim. The enu omer al tzura zu hanikaret le'inayim shehi ha-peh v'chotem v'lasatot v'shar roshem ha-guf shezu torshma. Don't think that tzelem refers to any physical attributes of the body. Ve'ena ha-nefesh ha-mutzuya l'chol nefesh chayasheba ochel v'shoteh u'malid u'margish u'meharher. It's not referring to any sort of physical, whether it be instinct or physical ability of that are common to animals. Even thought, he says, by the way, meharher. Now, what does he mean by that, meharher? I'm not so sure. But it must be not, it's contrasting to what he said before in terms of capacity for abstract thought. So, he says there are other terms that are used to denote this concept as well, such as a nefesh or a ruach. Therefore, you have to be very careful with the terms. Don't get your terms confused. Understand which term is being employed in which context. So we've established the Rambam's definition of Tzelem Elohim. Okay, and in that, I would recommend reading that first chapter also in the beginning of Marna Bukhim. It's very interesting how he continues to define Tzelem in contrast to other similar types of words. At the bottom of page, at the bottom of that chapter, actually, on page 14 in the book, the Rambam makes a comment which is intriguing. He says, "This perception has been compared, though only apparently, not in truth, to the divine perception." Right? It's called Tzelem Elohim. So certainly, the Torah itself is comparing human intellectual capacity to the divine. But the Rambam says, only apparently and not in truth. So what does he mean? In what sense are we compared to the divine? In what sense do we have an aspect of divine intellect? And in what capacity are we limited? Right, where is the distinction? He says, again, he says, only apparently but not in truth. How is it similar and how is it different? That's what I want to come to next. Okay, so let's take a step back from the Rambam for a second. I think if we get some more background from the Pesukim and see how maybe a couple of other Rishonim understand what exactly was going on in the creation of man, we can possibly then come back to the Rambam and understand what he's talking about. How is it similar? How is it different? So back in source number one, if you look in Bereshit Perek Bet Pasuk Zayin, in the creation of man, the second account of the creation of man, Vayitzer Hashem Elokim et ha'adam afar min ha'adama vayipach be'apav nishmat chayim vayhi ha'adam lenefesh chaya. Man was created dust of the earth, and was God breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became, how do they translate? Just look in the JPS translation on the side there. This is a living soul. Interestingly, Pasuk Yud Tet, when it talks about the creation of the animals, Vayitzer Hashem Elokim, same word, Vayitzer, Hashem Elokim min ha'adama kol chayat hasadeh et kol of ha'shemayim vayave el adam lirot ma yikra lo v'chol ashe yikra lo ha'adam nefesh chaya hushmo. Again, that term nefesh chaya, to describe the same term, describing the creation of the animals now. How does JPS translate it in this context? Living creature. Right? You see, it's, if you notice, it's, this is the problem with translations. Right? If you see, it's the same term, the exact same term, translated two different ways. The reason why they do that is obvious. The reason why they do that is because it's a different context, and it doesn't make sense, in their minds, to describe animals as being a living soul. Right? Soul is something that's unique to human beings. However, I have in the footnote here, since I pointed this out, that the Torah is using the same term for a reason. It's deliberately comparing man and animals, calling them both nefesh chaya. Okay? So that is something that is picked up on by the Rishonim. If you look in source number 3...
But yeah. Then, animals could talk. Maybe they had sort of a soul.
I don't animals could talk.
Well, didn't people talk with animals?
The snake talked to humans.
Okay, so that okay. Yeah, okay. So the question, all right? So that's really beyond what we want to talk about today. How the Rambam understands other Rishonim understand the incident with the snake, and whether, you know, in what sense was she speaking to the snake and was the snake speaking to her? I'm not sure. Right? I'm not sure if I'm willing to say that literally the snake was talking, or if in some way we don't really understand the snake was talking. So, yes.
The notion of nefesh hayah only comes about as a result of man's capacity to call them by name.
And what's the significance of that?
So possibly that you're talking about their essence, what they are.
Oh, interesting.
And then they're seemingly elevated to nefesh hayah, which is about their essence.
Right, so what is it? Okay, so what does it mean in nefesh?
They don't obtain that until there's this naming piece, which I think is significant.
Interesting. So, I guess we have to understand, what does the term nefesh chaya mean? What is man doing when he's calling them in nefesh chaya? Look in the pasuk.
He is labeling them
by giving them a name, an identity, or a purpose,
Well, is man the one actually calling them a nefesh chaya in his pasuk? They're being described by God. He's going to be, in the next few pasukim, he's going to be giving them names, right? And he's going to be identifying them. That's a whole interesting story in itself. Interesting. After he's identified them. Oh, interesting. So you're saying after he's given them a name, he's given them an identity and an essence, then they attain the full status of nefesh chaya. Interesting.
You could possibly argue that man possibly gets that before, already.
Something inherent. Okay, so we're going to see what is our next question, essentially, that leads us into the next question, which is, how is man similar and different to the animals? Right? Man is described, on the one hand, with the same terms as the animals. On the other hand, animals are not described in the term Tzelem Elokim. So what's the distinction exactly? So if you look in the Ramban in Source 3, the Ramban explains this, fleshes this out in a few places. I chose this source because it's concise and he says it nicely in all the places, but whatever. So in source number 3, the Ramban is bothered by the famous question of Na'aseh Adam B'Tzalmenu, right? The plural usage of let us make man, right? That's been the source of ire of many generations. So when you let us make man, does this refer to a duplicity of God, etc., etc.? So he says in source number 3, V'hapshat hanachon b'milat na'asehu. What does it mean, na'aseh, the plural form? Mipnei shekvar haret al adat, ki ha'elukim bara yesh me'ayin bayom harishon levado, v'achar kach minei yisadot ahem hanivraim yatsar v'asa. The Ramban has a principle, and he says this in a bunch of places. He says that the only time during the creation of the world where there was creation ex nihilo, where there was creation yesh me'ayin, something from nothing, was on the first day of creation itself. Right? That God on the first day of creation created something from nothing, created all of matter, so to speak. And then the successive days of creation were forming that matter into the specific animals, plants, etc., etc., human beings. Okay? That could be another interesting series of shirim. V'kasher natan b'mayim koach hasharutz l'shrotz nefesh chaya v'haya ma'amar b'hem yish etzira mayim v'haya ma'amar b'meimat hotzei ha'aretz. And using that matter he created on the first day, he commanded each of the respective forces of nature to form the waters, to form the things that live in the water, etc., etc. Look where the underlined section is. Amar ba'adam na'aseh klomar ani v'ha'aretz haniskeret na'aseh adam. Who's the plural referring to, says the Ramban? Na'aseh adam, let us. He says, me, Elohim, and the dust of the earth. He's talking to the land, says the Ramban. Na'aseh ha'adam b'tzalmenu. Let us make man in our image. Who's us? God and the earth. That's what the Ramban says. She'totzeh ha'aretz ha'guf mi'sodeha kasher astab ve'ema v'chaya. So that the earth should give rise to man from its elements. Kidichti vayitzera Hashem Elokim et Adam afar min adamah v'yitein hu yitbarach haruach mipni elyon. Kidichti vayipach be'apav neshmat chayim. Yeah.
Is this original thought by him, or is this something that he got from an earlier source, is something that was around in Jewish thought prior to?
It's an excellent question. I don't think I'm equipped to answer that question. I don't know. Certainly the thought, the Ramban in his introduction to the Torah, he talks about this primordial substance which was created by God. What he thinks is the only substance created, yesh me'ayin. The term for this substance is known as the hyuli, which was an ancient Greek concept. And he uses that term. Now, in terms of where exactly he's getting it from, is it purely from Greek sources? Is it from other? Is it from a Masorah? I'm not equipped to answer that question. So I don't know. The other Rishonim talk about this concept as well.
What was the word used?
Hiuli. I think I'm pronouncing it correctly. I'm not sure. I think I'm pronouncing it. Yeah. Yeah. So I don't speak Greek, but that's, you know.
Okay. Of course, in the Greek law, the Hylic principle was not a creation. It was co-eternal with God.
Correct. And much of the Moreh Nevuchim is dedicated to fleshing out that difference. Okay. So in let's look at source number four, the Abarbanel, who lived a couple of hundred years later after the Ramban. He's actually about 100 years, I think. So he says as follows: Aval Amar Naaseh Adam, it's an old Amar, Aniva Aretz Naaseh Adam. Again, he's following the same line of thought as the Ramban, that me and the land are going to create man. Murkav mechelek chomri min ha'aretz umechelek sichli asher etein bo, v'lachein amru gam ken b'tzalmenu kidmutenu, she'eha adam b'tzelem shneihem. Aval b'chinot shonot. That man is composed, when it says Na'aseh Adam b'tzalmenu kidmutenu, in our image, what does that mean? That man is composed, he has two components. He has an earthly component and a divine component. Ki b'mesh hu ba'al guf, yihyeh b'tzelem ha'aretz umiteva ha'tachtonim. Insofar as a person is someone who's connected to his physical essence, so he's governed more by the physical laws of nature, and he's treated as a physical object. Uvemesh hu bal seichel nefesh midabrot maseget hamuskalot yihyeh betzelem elokim umatbeh hatzurot nivdelot. And to the extent that man uses his intellectual capacity and becomes a bal seichel, someone who is involved in maseget hamuskalot, in comprehending intellectual concepts, that is to the extent where he's defined as a tzelem elokim, meaning a person has a choice, can take a stand. Right, can tilt himself to one side or the other. A person is composed of two components, the tzelem elokim and the physical afar min ha'adama. And to the extent that a person involves himself with physicality or involves himself with study, with, you could call it spirituality as well, that's the extent to which he will be defined at either end of the scale. So says the Abarbanel. Yeah.
So I think I've heard somewhere that we have two souls, basically. And so maybe that's what it's saying. That's why, like, when you shaft the deer, I mean, you have to spill the blood out differently than the cow, right? Because they say it has, like a soul, right?
Right. Well, yeah, the term they use there is nefesh, right? Right. There's a difference, though, as the Rambam pointed out, that sometimes the terms nefesh, ruach, they're homonyms. They can be used in different senses, in different contexts. It's not tzelem elokim, right? Right, it's different. It's nefesh. So there is some sort of life force that are in animals. It might be, you just gave me an idea actually, we're going to get, in the coming weeks, we're going to get really into the details of Ta'amei Mitzvot. Maybe that'll be one example. Maybe we'll talk about Kisui Hadam, in terms of covering, there's a mitzvah to cover blood of a shechted animal. That might be an interesting topic. Hopefully not too gruesome, but it'll be an interesting topic to cover. So maybe we'll get there.
You give us advance notice and all the vegetarians can stay home.
Exactly. So, and the implications of this, of a human being being comprised of essentially two separate components, the physical and the divine, is very important for the Rambam as well. If you look in source number 5, this comes on page 42 in the book, if you have your books. By the way, I should mention, from pages 40 to 43 in this book, I would highly, highly recommend reading the entire chapters regarding this topic. But the Rambam says as follows: you must consider when reading this treatise that mental perception, because connected with matter, is subject to conditions similar to those which physical perception is subject. A human being is comprised, says the Rambam, of two components, right? Of the divine and the physical. And because we're comprised of two components, that leads to an inherent difficulty in our study. Mental perception, right, the divine component, is limited by the physical, says the Rambam. That is to say, if your eye looks around, and I love this mashal, that is to say, if your eye looks around, you can perceive all that is within your range of vision. If, however, you overstrain your eye, exerting it too much by attempting to see an object which is too distant for your eye, or to examine writings or engravings too small for your sight, and forcing it to obtain a correct perception of them, you will not only weaken your sight with regard to that special object, but also for those things which you otherwise are able to perceive. Your eye will have become too weak to perceive what you were able to see before you exerted yourself and exceeded the limits of your vision. Right? Just as a person, says the Rambam, if you try to read the fine print, right, if you exert yourself too much, you can strain your eyes, and that impacts your vision not only for seeing the fine print, but for seeing everything. And so, says the Rambam, is it true with study of deep Torah concepts, of metaphysics, etc. That if a person exerts himself beyond his or her current intellectual ability, that can have an impact on what you were even able to perceive before. Right? That can be damaging even to something that was simple that you could have perceived before. So says the Rambam. And the Rambam has this theme, I don't know if you noticed it throughout his introduction as well, but he very much emphasizes learning in gradations. Right, which makes sense. Just like in a person studying in a university has to take certain prereqs before you can take the advanced courses. Right? So too it is with Torah, says the Rambam. And we're going to take a look at what those prerequisites are as we approach our study of Tamei Mitzvot. Because I said, we'll see Tamei Mitzvot really straddles these two areas. Straddles things which are a little easier to understand, meaning just the simple laws of the Mitzvot, which really everyone can comprehend to an extent, and the reasons behind them, what we'll call understanding the divine mind. So we have to understand what our limits are and the importance of approaching it in gradations. The importance of approaching it la'at la'at, according to our understanding, and not overexerting ourselves. So says the Rambam. This mashal, I think, from the Rambam about vision, I think is dead on. It's one of my favorite mashalim.
For those of us who were here yesterday, I was just commenting, this dovetails so smoothly on what Rabbi Rosenberg spoke about in his drash, about perspective and stepping back, and things you can see. Mashal o'imi polo o'imi sham, what you see from here, you can't see from here.
Interesting. Okay. So let's shift gears for a second. There's a famous story in the Talmud, in source number 6. There's a famous story in the Talmud that the Rambam uses as the paradigm for really encapsulating all what we've been saying. And he said, the Talmud describes a story of four Tanaim. Right? Very famous story. The four great Tanaim who were certainly at an extremely advanced level of intellectual culture, of Torah learning. The Gemara in Chagiga, Daf Yud Dalet, says, Tanu Rabbanan. Arba'a nechnesu bepardes. There were four who entered an orchard, we'll call it. Be'eluhin, Ben Azai, Ben Zoma, Acher, and Rabbi Akiva. Acher being the famous Elisha ben Avuya, the Talmud of Rabbi Meir. Amar lahem Rabbi Akiva. Teacher of Rabbi Meir. Amar lahem Rabbi Akiva. K'shatem magin etzel avnei shesh, tahor al... What?
Shayish.
Avnei shayish?
Marble.
Ah, okay. Avnei shayish tahor al tomru mayim mayim mishum shneamar dover shkarim lo yichon leneged enai. Right, so the exact meaning of his warning here is unclear to me. I looked in Rashi, I looked in different Mefarshim here. I'm really unclear as to exactly what he means. The translation I understand, but what he means by it, I'm not sure. You can look at the translation. Ben azay hitzitz v'met. He glanced and he died. Alava katuv omer yakar b'nei Hashem hamotal lechasidav. Ben Zoma hitzitz v'nifka. He glanced and he was injured. He went mad. Ve'alava katuv omer dvash matzata achol dayecha pen tisba'enu v'hakato. Acher kitzetz b'nitiyot. Acher, Elisha ben Avuya, cut down saplings. Rabbi Akiva yatza v'shalom. Rabbi Akiva left in peace. Very enigmatic story in the Gemara, but very famous story in the Gemara. So the Rambam in source number 7 in Hilchot Yesodei HaTorah, he explains what this Gemara is talking about. V'inyanei arba'a prakim elu shebechamesh mitzvot elu heim shechachamim harishonim korin oto pardes. What is this term pardes in orchard? What does it really mean? Right, they say there's an acronym that it means pshat, drash, remez, sod. Okay, that's one explanation. The Rambam says that this term pardes is referring to the mitzvot described in the previous four prakim in Hilchot Yesodei HaTorah. There were five mitzvot that the Rambam starts his Mishneh Torah with. The mitzvot are as follows. Knowing God, knowing the unity of God, not believing in other gods, loving God, and fearing God. Okay, those five mitzvot. To properly do those five mitzvot, it entails the study of pardes. Kimosha amru arba anich nesu the pardes. Va'afo pisha gdole Yisrael hayu v'chachamim gdolim hayu, excuse me, lo kulam haya behen koch leida ulahasig kol hadvarim al borian. Even though they were tremendous tanaim, gdolim, they did not have the ability to comprehend things fully, to comprehend the matters fully. The Rambam, in these prakim in Hilchot Yesodei HaTorah, he lays out the basic Roshe Prakim, remember we mentioned last week, the Roshe Prakim of Maaseh Breshit and Maaseh Merkava. Right? The study of physics and metaphysics, respectively, as the Rambam defines it. So the Rambam says these are what is called Pardes. These are the study of Maaseh Merkava and Maaseh Breshit. And that's what these four Tanaim were endeavoring to do. Has anybody read Milton Steinberg's book?
Yes.
Is it Driven Leaf? So we know it's the book, as he says, is a historical fiction, right? It's a fictional book, but he does a beautiful job of fleshing out the tensions of what that was like, the four Tanaim getting together and, you know, endeavoring to penetrate the depths of the Torah and entering the Pardes and what that must have been like. So it's a fascinating account. It's important to remember that with a grain of salt, it is fictional.
That book gave me pshat, I think, on Rabbi Akiva leaving B'Shalom. In the book, he describes Akiva's strong, solid home life. He had a strong wife, a home to come back to.
As opposed to Acher, talks about, right.
That was a pshat.
Right. Good.
Now, isn't some of these similar, not exact, given in another way, only certain people should study?
So I don't know, Kabbalah is, I don't know how to answer that question because I'm not sure what Kabbalah is.
Interesting.
Right.
Yeah. It's too young.
Yeah, right.
Well,
I'm not, yeah.
I don't know.
But furthermore, does Rambam talk about Kabbalah? I don't think so.
Right.
Kabbalah is not essential. It's a current phrase.
Right.
It's there in the tradition. It's not essential.
Right. I can't comment in Kabbalah because it's, I just don't know.
I don't know.
So in the second paragraph, he says here, "V'ani omer she'in ra'ui l'tayel b'pardes ela mishinit malei kreso lechem b'basar." The only people who could enter the Pardes are those who have filled themselves literally with meat and bread. But what does it mean? That's a metaphor, obviously. V'lechem u'basar hu leida ha'asur v'amutar u'chiyote behem mishar ha'mitzvot. First, the prerequisites. The Rambam is laying out the prerequisites. The prerequisites are to know davar ha'asur v'amutar, understand what's prohibited, what's permitted in terms of the mitzvot. V'afa pisha devarim elu devar katan karu ta chachamim. These things Chacham termed a davar katan, also in that Gemara in Chagiga. Sheharei amru chachamim davar gadol maaseh merkava v'davar katon havayot de'abai v'rava. The maaseh gadol is maaseh merkava, and relative to the things which are gadol, the great things, the most important things, relative are things which are called davar katan, the debates of Abaye and Rava, study of Talmud. But afal pikein ra'uyin lahen lahakdiman, still, there should be the prerequisite. Why? Shehen miyashvin da'ato shel adam tchila. Because these things have an effect of settling the mind. Ve'od shehem ha'tova gdola shishpia kadosh baruch hu liyishuv ha'olam hazeh kedei linchol chayi olam haba. These things have a great benefit in terms of keeping order in society. Yishuv ha'olam hazeh, in order so that we may inherit olam haba. Ve'efshar shiyada'am hakol katan ve'gadol ish v'isha balev rachav uvalev katzar. And the machlokot of Abaye and Rava, the study of Talmud, the study of Halakha, etc., these things which are accessible to all, to men, women, children, people who are with Lev Rachav, Lev Katzar, these things are accessible to all, therefore those should be the prerequisites. Right. And the Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim, if you look on page 42, following that line of thought that the intellectual ability of man is bound up with the physical and therefore limited by the physical, the Rambam in the third paragraph, it starts with the mental perceptions on page 42. The mental perceptions are not exempt from a similar condition, meaning being limited by the physical body. If you admit the doubt and do not persuade yourself to believe that there is a proof for things which cannot be demonstrated, or to try at once to reject and positively deny an assertion, the opposite of which has never been proved, or to attempt to perceive things which are beyond your perception, then you have attained the highest degree of human perfection. Then you are like Rabbi Akiva, who entered in peace and came out in peace, referring to our Gemara, the Gemara in Chagiga. What's the Rambam referring to? What does it mean to be like Rabbi Akiva? To approach it with modesty. That's what the Rambam says. To understand that just because you haven't found a proof for something that you're trying to understand, doesn't mean you should reject it. Right, that's a sense of modesty. If, on the other hand, you attempt to exceed the limit of your intellectual power, or at once to reject things as impossible which have never been proved to be impossible, or which are in fact possible, though their possibility be very remote, then you will be like Elisha Acher, jumping to conclusions. That was his character trait. You will not only fail to become perfect, but you will become exceedingly imperfect. So explains the Rambam. I'm not familiar with what it says in Michtam Eliyahu about this. So.
Years ago, I learned
unlike Hashem, who considers everything at once without issue, everything he can consider, we are limited. We say, well, I'll include this background, I'll include this background. It's, you know, hopefully we include all the right factors, and some factors we might miss.
So, in terms of
everything's considered at once.
Right. That sounds to me like in terms of our perspective being limited, unable to see. Sometimes unable to see the full picture, the global picture of a concept, let's see, in the same way that Hashem can.
Right.
So I don't know if that's what the Rambam is saying here, but I think he would say similar things in other places. So, okay. So now we understand that the Rambam has established, and through the sources we've established, that the human intellect is somewhat limited by the extent to which we're bound to our body. In the same way that visual perception is limited, we must understand to approach the study of esoteric topics in gradations, taking the prerequisites, so to speak. But is there an end to the limit? Right? What about Moshe, for example? Is it possible for a human being to be limitless? Right? To soar to the divine heights? So let's look at... Yeah. The question I want to ask...
I don't think Moshe was inherently limited. I think that Hashem limited him.
Well, either way, he was limited.
Because I think that Hashem decided it would be bad for the world if a certain point were exceeded.
Right. So let's see what the Rambam says about it. Because from the Morne Vuchumai, it's a little difficult, at least the parts that we've seen so far, it seems to be a little difficult to ascertain what the Rambam thinks. Is this limit absolute, or is it only relative in terms of different people's intellectual capacity? So, in page number 4, source number 8, we have the psukim that we've been referring to about Moshe, in Shmot Perek Lamed Gimel. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, gam et hadavar hazeh asher dibarta e'aseh ki matzata chen be'enai ve'edaacha b'shem. Right, I have known you by name, known you personally, says Hashem. Vayomar, Moshe says, Hareni na et kivodecha. Vayomar, ani avir kol tuvi al penecha, vekarati v'shem Hashem lefanecha, vechanoti et asher achon, v'richamti et asher arachem. Vayomar, lo tuchal lirot et panai, ki lo yirani adam v'chai. Hashem responds, sorry. Right? You can't see me. Why? Because it's impossible for man to see me and live. Vayomar Hashem, hini makom iti v'nitzavta latzur, v'aya ba'avur kvodi v'samticha v'nikrat atzur, v'sakuti chapi alecha, al ovri. Vahasiroti et kapai veraiti et achorai ufanai lo yerao. You can see my back, but you cannot see my face. Very cryptic passage in the Torah. And the Rambam, in source number 9 in Hilchot Yesodei HaTorah, Perek Aleph Halacha Yud, has a very interesting explanation of what's going on here in this exchange between Moshe and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ma'uzeh shebikesh Moshe Rabbeinu la'sig kishe'amar hareini na'ad kivodecha. What was Moshe asking for when he said, let me comprehend, let me see your glory? Bikesh leida amitat himatza'o shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu ad sheyeh yadua b'libo kimo yidi'at echad min ha'anashim shera'a panav v'nechkaka tzurato b'libo. He wanted to see God, so to speak. What's the metaphor of face-to-face? Just as when you see a friend or an acquaintance face-to-face, you know clear as day who you're talking to. You have a complete sense of who the identity of the person is in front of you. That's what Moshe wanted to see. And you can readily, clearly, 100% distinguish this person from other people by looking at them.
So the translation is interesting. It's the panim.
Mm-hmm.
As well as the external.
That's interesting, right? It's interesting in terms of how Lashon HaKodesh works, right? Panim being internal and panim being face, and one being a reflection of the other. Very good. Kach bikesh Moshe Rabbeinu liyot mitziyot HaKadosh Baruch Hu nifredet bilibo mishar nimtzeim ad sheyeda mitat himatzo kasher hu. Moshe wanted to know God as a distinct entity, just as he know any other physical entity. Right? He wanted to know God clear as day. And we said the Rambam seemed to intimate in Morne Vuchum, that going back to that mashal with the flashes, that Moshe had the continuous flashes of light, right? That Moshe had a clear path, so to speak, and be able to see things in full light. But then the Rambam says, "V'hishivo baruch hu." What was God's response? She'ein koach bedat ha'adam achai shehu mechubar miguf v'nefesh lehasig amitat davar zeh al borio. And that's the Rambam's conclusion. He says, it's inherently impossible, I believe the Rambam is saying, it's inherently impossible for man who is comprised, and why is it inherently impossible? Because, shehu mechubar miguf ha'nefesh. Going back to that theme, because he has those two components, guf and nefesh, the physical and the intellectual. It's impossible for him to understand these matters fully. Hashem, what did he allow him to see? A lot. But to the extent only that just the mashal that the Torah gives, and the Rambam explains, is just as you see, let's say, a person that you recognize, an acquaintance from, let's say, down the block, and you only see their back, and you can kind of make out who it is, right? You can understand who that is, you recognize them, you're still not, you never have that 100% certainty.
Well, you heard it twice, so to speak.
Right. Good, all right, good. Right, it is written panim el panim, so we have to understand, how does the Rambam understand that? Maybe, I've done a separate shir about Moshe. I don't know, if people want, we can do that. I'm not sure if we're gonna do that. But right, what does it mean for the Rambam panim for the Torah? Right, what does it mean panim el panim if Hashem said, you know, you can only see my back and not my panim? Right, there seems to be a contradiction in the psukim. Right, right. Good point. But
maybe that panim is the meaning that Shalom was talking about. I mean, that, you know, the inside part. That God knew Moshe on the inside.
What's the difference between the inside and the outside when we're talking about God?
Right.
I don't know.
Reverse.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And I'm not.
Right. I'm not. Yeah. I think when you're talking about inside and outside and talking about God, it's these terms are all metaphorical.
Right.
So I'm not sure exactly what it means. Right.
Well, using the same metaphor, you know, from halfway down the block, and you see a friend from behind, even if you are absolutely sure it's this person.
Right.
Because you're not seeing their face. Right. Like, you can't say, you know, is she in a good mood today? Is she in a bad mood today? Is she happy? Is she sad? There's certain things you can't know.
Right, you can't know.
We're only seeing reverse.
Right. Certain types of nonverbal communication.
Anyway, when you catch up.
Right, and I'm sure...
Your twin sister.
Right, we've all had the experience, I'm sure. I know I've had the experience many times of, like, you know, you see someone who you think you know and you go tap them on the shoulder and it's the wrong person.
Yeah.
Right? I've definitely had that experience. Right?
Yeah.
With all that experience. Even though you see them from the back, you're sure it's that person,
right.
But you're never 100% sure.
No, you
you make the mistake.
And we also have two members in our show who are identical twin sisters.
Right.
Not to each other, but they each have identical twins.
Right. So that's the mashal the Rambam gives. So just,
that's right. I forgot about him.
Just to recap what we've seen so far, we've seen the Rambam's understanding of human essence, Tzelem Elokim, what that means. He understands it to be the ability to comprehend abstract concepts, the capacity for abstract thought. Right, that's defined as Tzelem Elokim. We've seen that man is composed, for the Ramban, for the Rambam, for the Abarbanel, for others as well, that man is composed of two components, really, Sukkim seemed to intimate that, of two components, the Guf and the Nefesh, and because of that duality, man is inherently limited in our intellectual capacity. But even though man is inherently limited as a species, as the Rambam says regarding Moshe, and maybe if we do another share about Moshe, we'll see why the Rambam understands Moshe as the absolute apex of human perfection. It's the highest the human being can ever go. So, I lost my train of thought. So the Rambam understands that, even though the Rambam understands that human intellect is inherently limited because of this duality of the nefesh and the guf, there are various levels, there are various gradations within those limits. Right? Certain people are capable of attaining certain levels of perfection, other of understanding, others attaining higher, lower, etc. And it all has to go along taking the prerequisites. You have to move along gradations, stepwise. It's not simply jumping to the deepest abstract concepts. That's dangerous, says the Rambam. There you run the risk of hurting your vision and blurring your vision to the point where you're not able to see the things you were able to see before. Next time we're going to talk about how we apply these limits to understanding of Tamei Mitzvot. We're going to start moving into Tamei Mitzvot itself. And hopefully we're going to understand the debate over Tamei Mitzvot. What's the purpose of giving reasons for the Mitzvot? How much can we really know? Is there any point? We say that, let's say, keeping kosher is to keep us healthy. Right? Just as an example.
If we weren't nut free, we could have M&Ms here.
Okay, so let's not debate that. Right, let's not debate that now. The point is there any purpose to giving Tamei Mitzvot at all? Maybe you can always find a proof against whatever reason you give. Or how can we ever know the divine mind? If we're inherently limited, as the Rambam says. So then, what's the point?
You can't do that. You have the
Chukim. Okay, so Chukim and Mishpatim we'll talk about. We'll talk about, yeah.
What's the sense of your question? What's the point? When you have a little perception, that's a good thing.
I'm sorry?
The fact that you don't have the ultimate, you're asking what? You're saying what? Your question was, what's the point?
Yeah.
But I'm not sure I understand the nature of that question. In other words, if you have a 10% understanding,
you're saying that's worthwhile.
That's a value.
Right. Okay, so let me rephrase it. I'm saying, what's our goal? Right. What's our goal in Tamei Mitzvot? Are we really trying to get to the truth, the reason why Hashem legislated a mitzvah, or is it something else? So, yeah.
Well, it's just so we better understand Hashem. I mean, if we can understand a little bit of why He does one thing, maybe it gives us insight into other things.
So we'll see next week that the Rishonim take various approaches as to how much this is a value, right? And what purposes can it serve, the endeavor of Tamei Mitzvot. So with that, we'll leave off for next time. We should be back on it next week. And hope to see you all back.
We say that we should always eye in and we ask Allah for us to see you. Rambam.
Hilchos Me'ilah. Yeah, so that's going to be on the source sheet. That's going to be
it. Let's go take a look at the final halacha of the Mishnah Torah, Hilchos Me'ilah, which talks about the force of why it's good to look at reasons for mitzvah.